You are likely familiar with that old saying, the eyes are the windows to the soul. Yes. It seems that modern research is finding our eyes might offer quite profound insights into our cognitive well-being, perhaps even more than just emotional states.
Indeed. And that capability leads us straight into our topic for this deep dive, the swiftly advancing field of eye tracking technology. Specifically, its potential to pick up on early signs of cognitive changes.
But that potential immediately raises a serious ethical question, doesn't it?
It does, a crucial one. How do we share potentially sensitive health findings with people? How do we do it in a way that encourages reflection, maybe self-awareness, without causing undue distress or anxiety?
Our discussion today is grounded in some significant research. It's from Christopher Changmok Kim, Matthias Hopp, and Kai Koons, and their paper is titled Eye Tracking for Cognitive Well-Being, Balancing Detection and Ethical Feedback.
And their work doesn't just look at the technical side, you know, can we detect these things? It also delves deep into the human elements, the considerations around actually giving people this cognitive health information.
So, our mission today, for you listening, is to unpack the science first. How do eye movements actually signal cognitive states? And then, critically, explore the innovative, ethically-minded strategies these researchers are proposing for delivering this potentially delicate feedback.
It should provide a nuanced view of both the technology itself and its human implications.
Okay, let's start with the science then. How exactly do our eyes give away these cognitive secrets? What's this unseen language they're speaking?
Well, the foundation is that research shows clearer links, clear correlations between certain eye movement patterns and cognitive health. This includes signs of cognitive impairment.
And catching these signs early is vital, I assume, for conditions like mild cognitive impairment, MCI, or even dementia.
Critically important. Early detection, potential intervention.
Yeah.
It can make a substantial difference. And eye tracking offers a potential avenue for that.
What specific abnormalities are we talking about? What do researchers look for?
Several have been documented. For example, studies show that individuals with MCI or dementia often display less ocular control. They tend to make more errors in tasks designed to test gaze inhibition.
Gaze inhibition, like the anti-saccade task.
Exactly, that's a key one. In the anti-saccade task, you're asked to look away from a new stimulus that suddenly appears. It measures your ability to suppress that automatic reflexive glance towards it.
Sort of a test of impulse control for the eyes.
You could put it that way. And research indicates that individuals with MCI or dementia show a higher error rate on these tests. They look towards the stimulus more often when they were instructed not to.
Okay. And are there other indicators beyond that specific task?
Oh, certainly. Other correlations have been noted. For instance, significantly higher rates of eye blinking in some individuals.
Higher blink rates?
Yes. And also lower accuracy and speed during smooth pursuit tasks. That's where you follow a moving target smoothly with your eyes. And deficits in fixation stability as well, holding your gaze steady on one point.
So these aren't just random eye twitches or lapses in attention.
Not according to the research. These specific metrics, things like longer times to initiate a saccade or those higher blink rates or errors in smooth pursuit, they act as measurable proxies for underlying cognitive processes.
Proxies like slower processing speed, perhaps, or issues with executive function.
Precisely. Things like planning, focusing attention, managing tasks, and importantly, these eye tracking metrics have been validated. They've been compared against standard neuropsychological assessments and shown to correlate.
That's quite specific, but how do researchers ensure these subtle movements aren't just, you know, someone having an off day? Tiredness, maybe, or distraction?
That's a very pertinent question, and it underscores why this research isn't just about detection. The tasks are designed carefully to try and isolate specific cognitive functions. And it's the consistency of these patterns over time, not just a single instance, that suggests an underlying issue rather than temporary fatigue.
Okay, that makes sense. So understanding what the eyes might reveal is one part, but it immediately throws up that challenge we mentioned earlier, delivering this information.
Yes, the ethical crossroads.
When and how should someone be told about potential signs of cognitive decline found through, say, an app using eye tracking? It's incredibly sensitive personal health data. Respecting autonomy and emotional well-being seems paramount.
It is. And this situation has a unique dimension compared to, say, a doctor delivering difficult news face-to-face.
How so?
Well, think about it. Here, the initial notification might very well come directly from a piece of software, from an application or a computer system. that completely changes the dynamic.
Ah, right. It raises new questions about timing, about the interface design, about how that message is framed when there isn't necessarily a human clinician present at that moment.
Exactly. And that's what distinguishes this work. It's not just about detection or even cognitive training using eye tracking. It's fundamentally about the feedback process.
Yeah.
The human factors involved in delivery.
So to explore this ethical feedback challenge, the researchers didn't just stop at theory. They built a prototype.
They did. They developed a system they call the Firefly. It uses a specific piece of hardware, the Pupil Labs Neon Eye Tracker. It's a sophisticated, quite lightweight device, allows for precise tracking in more natural settings.
And the Firefly system has two main goals, as I understand it.
Correct. First, to function potentially as a tool for daily detection, maybe even intervention, related to cognitive decline. But second, and crucially for our discussion, to explore how feedback can be given in a way that promotes that personal reflection without causing significant distress.
How does it actually work in practice?
The system periodically gives the user short, gaze-based tasks. These are framed as simple eye-tracking games, for instance, following the path of a virtual firefly on the screen.
And the firefly lights up if you're following it correctly.
That's the idea. It gives immediate task feedback. But importantly, while the user is doing this, the system is passively recording those key eye metrics we discussed. Blink rate, saccade details, smooth pursuit accuracy, fixation stability.
Passively, so it analyzes the data later.
Yes, the analysis happens post hoc after the short gamer task is done. This way, it collects the data without constantly interrupting the user with performance scores during the task itself.
Okay, and then comes the critical part. Presenting the findings. What strategies are they exploring?
They're focusing on two main innovative strategies for presenting this data back to the user.
The first one is about user control.
Yes, user-controlled feedback. The core idea here is no unsolicited alerts popping up saying, warning, cognitive score changed. Instead, the user decides when they want to see their data.
So you could set it up to maybe give a summary once a week, or only alert you if a metric crosses a threshold you defined beforehand.
Exactly. It prioritizes user control and readiness. It respects what the researchers call the right not to know, the right to engage with this information only when you feel prepared for it.
The right not to know. That's a potent concept in this context. What's the second strategy?
The second is termed gradual disclosure. This is more of a tiered or layered approach. The system might start with very subtle cues or only partial information.
Like what, for example?
Well, an early subtle message might just suggest doing a cognitive exercise. Or it might show a small visualization performance change, but without any alarming interpretation attached initially.
So not hitting you with the full picture straight away.
Correct. More explicit information, more detailed interpretations would only be revealed if the user actively asks for more, perhaps clicks deeper into the data, or maybe if certain trends persist over a longer period.
And the thinking behind this is...
The hypothesis is that this layering, this gradual revealing, could prevent that sudden shock or distress. It aims to empower users, giving them a sense of control over the process of discovering this information about themselves.
Both approaches sound considerably more thoughtful than just a raw data dump or a sudden alert. How do they plan to measure if these strategies actually work better?
They have plans for studies to evaluate them thoroughly. They'll look at users' emotional responses using standard mood questionnaires before and after interacting with the feedback.
Makes sense. What else?
They'll also gather subjective cognitive self-assessments, how users feel about their own cognition. Crucially, they'll measure perceived control, trust in the system, and how well users actually comprehend the information being presented.
And beyond feelings and perceptions, will they look at behavior?
Yes. Behavioral outcomes are part of it, too. Are users engaging with recommended cognitive exercises if suggested? Do they adjust their feedback settings over time? Things like that.
The overall goal being...
The ultimate aim is to derive concrete design guidelines, principles for creating cognitive health feedback interfaces that are effective, ethical, and user-centered. And these guidelines could potentially apply beyond just eye tracking to other types of pervasive health monitoring, too.
So let's try to summarize where we've journeyed in this deep dive. We've looked at this core challenge, how to ethically weave sensitive cognitive health information gathered through technologies like eye tracking into our daily lives.
And we've seen that the focus of this research by Kim, Hopp, and Kunze moves significantly beyond just detecting potential cognitive changes. It centers on the responsible, user-friendly, ethically sound presentation of that data.
The insights seem quite pivotal, not just for eye tracking, but potentially for a whole range of pervasive health technologies that are emerging.
They really are. It fosters a much more user-centered way of thinking about these assistive solutions within the broader field of human-computer interaction.
Of course, there are significant risks involved that the researchers acknowledge.
Absolutely. At the individual level, there's the huge concern of protecting the privacy of this incredibly sensitive cognitive data. And as we've discussed, mitigating potential psychological harm from receiving the information.
And on a bigger scale, societally.
Societally, you have concerns about potential data misuse, about algorithmic bias creeping in, or even the risk of further stigmatizing cognitive conditions if this technology isn't deployed thoughtfully and equitably.
It certainly leaves us with a profound question to consider, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
As these kinds of digital biomarkers derived from eye movements or other sensors become more common, how do we as individuals and as a society ensure this continuous monitoring actually empowers us? Empowers us with early awareness rather than just causing distress, anxiety, or potential harm.
And what responsibility do we all share in shaping the ethical future of these powerful technological capabilities? It's something we'll need to continue grappling with.